Welcome to Chevron's Lock to Stargate podcast. I'm Chelsea.
I'm Jess.
And I'm Melanie.
This evening we are talking about season one, episode 21, Politics, which is a part one of a three-part series of episodes ending season one and starting season two. It was written by Brad Wright, directed by Martin Wood, his second episode, and it aired the 27th of February, 1998. It is functionally a glorified clip show, but it does bring us the first appearance of Ronnie Cox as Senator Palpatine Kinsey. And we get Robert Wisden returning as Lieutenant Colonel Samuels. Well, he was Major Samuels last time.
He's been promoted.
Yep. So I know it's a clip show, but Mel, you got a recap for us?
I do.
Oh my God, I forgot we did recaps.
Or synopsis.
Guys, it's been a hot minute.
After experiencing a Gould invasion in an alternate reality, Daniel attempts to warn Stargate Command of the possibility of it happening in this reality. The government, however, has other plans as Senator Robert Kinsey evaluates the dangers of the Stargate program.
Yep.
All right. That's what happened.
That's pretty much all that happens.
All right. So we're done, right? That's it.
Yep. Let's rate this.
Wrap it in a bow. We're done.
So we should maybe address the fact that we've been, quote unquote, off the air for a while.
Yeah. Our last recording was in November, and this is actually our second time recording Politics. There was a technical error, our third of the season. Let's see what's happened in the last like 3 months.
We've had a whole bunch of life stuff happen.
Well, so. I mean, holidays.
And holidays.
Yeah, happened.
Jess and Melanie both moved.
We moved. Good God. There was promotions. There were mm-hmm. Oh my God, what's a lot's happened.
Mm-hmm. Wedding. I had to go to a wedding, family member's wedding across the country.
Yeah, you know, traveling, and
we've just been really busy.
Yeah,
that's it.
But you know what the beauty of Stargate is, guys? That it's always there waiting for us.
it ages like a fine wine.
Sure. No.
I'm just kidding. We've already talked about how some of it does not age.
Yeah, but I feel like we're finally settled now, and we're kind of back on like a normal schedule, and I don't think anything's changing too terribly for the foreseeable future.
As usual, spoiler warnings and explicit content warnings.
Yes.
Are there really any spoilers in this episode?
Well, because basically it's like a recap of the entire like up until now, and like the little the Stargate Illustrated Companion says there's a quote in here from Brad Wright, which I thought was interesting because it kind of explains like why this episode's here. And so Brad Wright says that Politics was unashamedly a clip show, which almost always happens in the first season of a show that does a pilot as big as SG-1, that the episode was designed to save money. And Brad Wright has done several clip shows, which is something that he's not particularly proud of. But one of the things that he's learned when doing them is to get a star such as Ronnie Cox. And that's kind of like the saving grace of this episode, according to Brad Wright. And apparently before the clips, the episode was 26 minutes long. And so with the exception of those 26 minutes, everything else was clips.
Well, how long is the episode, though? Is it still like 43 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of clips.
Well, but that's with credits the titles and the credits, yeah.
But still, that's
But the credits are 30, like a minute, so yeah, like...
That's still 30-ish minutes of clips. That's a lot of clips.
It's like 20 minutes of clips, Jess.
It's like 16 minutes of clips.
Listen, one of the other things that I did in our hiatus was take my GRE. And I struggled with the math portion. I passed, but I did struggle. And since I've taken the test and passed, I've let all the math get out of my brain. So that's what I meant to say.
All right. So this episode starts with a guy treating Daniel's wounds, yes, which suddenly looks a lot less serious than it was at the end of the previous episode when he came through the gate with a giant staff blast wound. Or I guess he didn't when he came through the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
And that just happened, right? That was in the immediate aftermath of that.
Which I appreciate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I always love when there's continuity.
Mm-hmm.
There's not much in the show.
Continuity. No. We've touched on that.
I'm just saying, just bringing it up again. Sorry.
No. It's a theme. It's okay to revisit themes. So Daniel passes on his warning of what was happening in the other version of the reality. So we get the Wizard of Oz reference of the day.
And you were there, and you were there, and there's no place like home.
I love how much he references Wizard of Oz during, like, the early season. I think it kind of tapers off towards the end, but I feel like seasons 1 through 3, there's quite a few.
For sure, and it is amusing. And so basically, they don't really believe Daniel.
Right.
I think they believe that he clearly, like, went through something, experienced something. He came back with a staff wound, so something happened, but they don't totally understand what it was.
And I feel like this is, like, going to be a theme for SG-1 of something strange and bizarre happens to one of its members, and despite all they've seen, they kind of, like, refuse to believe it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's a frustrating thing. At least this is early enough that things like alternate universes and realities and dimensions might still seem a little far-fetched, but yes, in general, it is frustrating that they can't believe the extraordinary when they witness the extraordinary on the regular.
Yeah.
It's a little like Scully still being a skeptic 7 seasons into the X-Files.
Yeah. It's like, at some point, you're going to have to, like, change your tune.
All right. So they don't believe him, and he starts talking about how, well, and Sam kind of asks, like, well, even if it was, how do we know that whatever was a threat there is a threat to us? And he says that it was the same with some subtle differences, and he starts talking about the differences, and we get this great moment.
Daniel, when you were in this alternate reality, were there differences?
Yes. Teal'c was leading the attack on Earth. I wasn't even part of the program. You and Jack were engaged to be married.
Excuse me?
What?
I love how, first of all, how blasé Daniel is about saying that. Like, mm-hmm. Just another fact. And then their faces are priceless.
Well, and, like, of all the, like, differences between the worlds, that's what he, like, decides to tell them. Because,
right?
Because, I mean, Jack was also, like, the commander of the base, and Sam wasn't military. But no, the important thing here is that you guys were engaged.
Well, it doesn't say, like Catherine Langford was working for the SGC. Yep, no, hones right in on that fact.
It's almost like the writers are trying to set something up for us that we've been hinting at kind of all season, and we're going to start building towards more in your face as the seasons go on. It's something like that.
It is pretty deliberate.
Mm-hmm.
So then we get a wonderful exchange between Carter and Jack.
Okay, even if you did actually experience this alternate reality, doesn't the very fact that there were differences mean that we won't face the same fate?
Yes, but the defining event, the death of Ra, took place in both worlds.
50 cc. An attack of retribution.
Yes! And the same thing is going to happen here unless we stop it.
All right, wait a minute. Let me get something straight. Engaged?
It is theoretically possible.
It's against regulations.
I'm talking physics, sir.
To be fair, though, Daniel didn't tell him that Sam wasn't part of the military in the alternate reality. So I can see how he would be stuck on the it's against regulations.
I feel like the it's against regulations thing is just like that. Like, he's not stuck on it because it's against regulations. He's stuck on it because his little brain is short circuiting at the possibilities. And then it's Sam who is like, okay, we gotta box that up for later. We've got a situation at hand. And I like how quickly he says it's against regulations. Like, he's thought about it and has, like, told himself over and over again, like, nope, it's against regulations. Can't, nope, don't touchy.
It was very loudly, too. It wasn't like a regular Jack saying. It was, like, very loud.
Like, he's reminding both of them.
Like, it's the only fathomable reason that they wouldn't get together.
I also like that Jack then believes that Sam's response to them being engaged is, it's theoretically possible. Like, that means that Jack, that's what he expects from her.
I do love the way that she kind of, like, he says that they both have their reaction, and then Sam is like, okay, moving on. And then, but I love that I'm talking physics, sir.
Which is, again, it's like Sam acknowledging, like, yes, I know what you're talking about. Like, focus.
Focus. I love that he clearly isn't. Like, I don't even think that he hears the rest of the conversation. No. He's just, like, no. Perseverating.
End of the world? What? No. I got to think about me and Sam being engaged.
Yeah. What I wrote in my notes is, this scene will never not amuse me.
Mm-hmm. It's a good scene.
It makes me giggle every time. So then our fun little scene gets interrupted by Samuels. Ugh. Who is back and still slimy.
He sucks.
Yeah. He informs them that there's a hearing to cut funding to the SGC. And then we get the credits and come back to Hammond's office, where Senator Kinsey is introduced. And I think it's pretty clear from the beginning that he's supposed to be a villain, but he actually starts off somewhat reasonable, like making... There are fair points that he makes throughout this episode. Mm-hmm. And then it just, like, escalates to being more and more political grandstanding.
Yeah. That's kind of what, like, I mean, like, I don't like this episode. I think it's kind of a waste of a season, like, an episode in a season like this. But I do appreciate that they're kind of, like, throwing back in, like, this dose of reality to remind you this isn't, like, a pure sci-fi show. This is a military sci-fi show. And, like, with that comes the government. Like, the military doesn't operate independently. It's got strings. And we have to, like, look at who's pulling strings, who's paying for the strings, like... It sucks, and it's frustrating for us as a viewer, because we've, like, been on these adventures with everybody, and we can't be with Kinsey, who's getting reports, or who has expectations of the thing. So in some ways, you kind of are like, listen, I see why you're here, I understand the points you're making, but you don't know the fun adventures we've been on, and you're not listening.
No. So
he's a good villain.
Yeah,
he does all the fun adventures that they've been on. He just doesn't think that they've done anything of importance. Therefore, that's
just
it.
He thinks they've just been having fun.
Exactly. They've just been spending, what is it? How much?
$7.4 billion.
Thank you. $7.4 billion to run around the galaxy just to shoot laser weapons. I don't know.
To his point, they kind of have, because they haven't, like, brought anything back. That's been, like, a recurring theme all season. Like, hey, remember how we were supposed to be bringing back, like, technology and medicine, and we haven't been doing that? Like,
a little bit, there have been hints at that. Like, they brought back some medicine from the Emancipation Planet, right? I thought there was a little bit
of that. I think you made that up.
No.
I made that up?
No.
They did. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Well, they at least referenced it. They said, like, it was like an anesthetic, I think.
Oh, yes. Okay, I remember now.
But even still, like, that isn't, like, the, hey, remember our whole directive of, like, bringing back technology? We should go look at this planet.
Space guns?
Yeah. Like, that's, like, one of the plot points of, like, four episodes this season.
Yeah. No, Kinsey isn't completely wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, they're going to have a hearing in the SGC because they can't debate whether the SGC is worth that much money publicly.
Right.
Like most things would be debated for Senate appropriations or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Jack mentions that he prefers battle to a hearing, which absolutely fits with his character.
Yep.
And Daniel's like, well, that's okay. I'll just tell him about what I just saw and how important the SGC is. And Jack is like, oh, let's keep a lid on that.
I love that it doesn't matter, like, how many adventures Daniel goes on with SG-1 or how much he's around military. He just never picks up on, like, the nuances of working for the government or the military. He's just so naive sometimes.
Mm-hmm. I feel like he does actually... Much later.
Oh, much later.
But yes.
But these early seasons, man, he just believes that, no, I'll just tell them what I saw. And the government's like, great. Go.
The government's going to be like, I'm going to throw you in a white padded room. Thanks.
Yeah, so then Kinsey gets introduced. And I will give credit to Brad Wright, because Ronnie Cox really does bring something to this episode and to this role.
Yeah.
Throughout the rest of the series, I love to hate him.
Yeah.
And
he's kind of like the Umbridge of the SG-1 world. Like,
he is. I would say he's less terrible than Umbridge, because, I mean, Umbridge is the worst.
Yes. definitely. But I feel like that same, like, oh, I want to strangle a fictional character feeling.
Kinsey, and I love this, calls the Stargate the drain through which the money flows.
Yeah. Like a toilet.
It's very apt because it does sort of look like a drain.
That makes everyone with floaters.
I'm picturing them getting flushed every time they go through a wormhole.
This is the A-plus analysis brought to you by Chevron Fox. Stargate is a toilet, and SG-1 are little turds floating through. We're back, baby!
We're not back until there's a dick reference.
Oh, well, that's coming later, don't worry.
Oh, I've got plenty in the Serpent's Grasp episode when we introduce Zats.
Yeah. Oh, God. Teeny tiny little handheld penises. Oh, my
God. We will get to that.
Yes.
All right, so then we get this quote from Kinsey, which again, I think is a valid point. So basically what he says is that what grows in shadow withers in the light or something like that.
Oh, yeah, that was a good,
I have it.
I mean, I wrote it was a badass metaphor is what I wrote.
I believe that which grows in the shadows and withers in the light of day does not belong on the vine.
Yeah. So it's actually, like Melanie, it's a badass metaphor, I think. And so Kinsey finds it offensive. But POTUS, so the president asked him to hear them out. It seems like Kinsey was just ready to be like, nope, we're chopping it.
I just find it interesting that he has that much power to just be like, we're just going to chop this now and not even worry about
it. You know, when I first watched this episode, I may have felt that way. And then I've seen how Mitch McConnell basically controls the country. And I'm like, okay, maybe Kinsey really can just be like...
Really brought the mood down there,
Chelsea. Yep, you did. Okay.
Politics, Kinsey, so much more fun to hate.
Yeah, and I feel like that this is like the point of the episode. It's like it doesn't matter how right or wrong you think something is. Someone somewhere in the government has more power than you. That kind of just, it's out of your hands. Because like Kinsey says, like, oh, I'll try and keep an open mind. But like, you know, you just know he doesn't have an open mind. He's come in as a courtesy. Like, he's already made up his mind, and this is all pointless. It's futile, basically.
Yeah. Well, and that's pretty much what he's telling him. Like, he promised to hear them out, but basically what he's saying is, I had already decided what I was going to do before I ever stepped in the doors.
Yeah.
And so Sam and Daniel try to laud the program's scientific and historical significance, which is, like, a big deal. Like, discovery for discovery's sake has been an important thing throughout American history. Like, we didn't go to the moon for really any strategic reason. I mean, we were racing the Russians there.
Yeah.
But it's not like it wasn't a tactical advantage.
Right.
And the historical significance of being able to, like, find different branches of humanity, like, scattered through different timelines and taken at different times, like, that is pretty epically huge from a scientific standpoint. But Kinsey brings up Pandora. Yeah. It's just like, you realize it's a myth, right? Which Daniel brings up. He's like, I love it when, I don't know if I pulled that clip. I don't think I did. But Daniel's like, keeping in mind that Pandora is a myth.
Or it is until we travel to some planet and then we find a box and then we realize
that it was real the whole time.
Yeah. And I love that. I like it when Daniel gets sassy, especially with a-holes like Kinsey. So,
well, he really has no skin. I mean, he has nothing to lose. I mean, if the SGC is being shut down anyway, he has no military career to protect, so he can be whatever the hell he wants to be.
So then Jack brings up the very valid point of, hey, the Goa'ulds are a threat to this planet, whether we like it or not. And like, this is the first line of defense. And then Kinsey, you can tell he's a politician because he just talks in metaphor and fear-mongering. It's like, they do a pretty good job of making him very much a politician.
I just find it interesting that that Kinsey's rationale to stop the Gould from coming in the first place is just to bury the Stargate. Like, if we don't go through it, they can't come through here. And they're all like,
It's like, dude. How has he never seen... Have you seen Independence Day?
Right?
Isn't it out by now? They've got ships. Like, come on.
Didn't someone make an Independence Day reference in an episode?
Yeah, here.
Oh, okay. Right. I was like, isn't it?
It was right now. So first he talks about how he's used to doomsayers in uniform, and they always are warning of barbarians at the gate, which is honestly a fair point. Like, the military is always going to ask for more money.
Trigger happy.
Yeah. So, but then we get this Independence Day reference.
Then I think they'll regret taking on the United States military.
Oh, for God's sake.
Oh, you're right. We'll just upload a computer virus into the mothership.
So, I love it, first of all, because, again, Daniel's being sassy and I'm here for it. But also because Dean Devlin and Roland Emmerich, who wrote the original Stargate movie, also wrote and produced Independence Day. So, fun little nod to...
part of our Stargate family.
Yeah. And I love that Kinsey's like, yeah, we'll kill the aliens. Like, how could he possibly know that? They're capable of that.
He's just so pompous. And I just
that's
can't.
Like part of, that's the frustration. It's like, you, ah.
Yeah, but he doesn't know. He just assumes. And I hate people who just, like, assume that because we're the United States of America, we're going to automatically, like, just destroy whoever it is. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, and it's like, these are the experts. So if you were going to do, like, a, you know, battle plan and what the viability is of a conflict with some foreign force, you would go to like the generals and the soldiers and be like, okay, can we defeat them? What are the resources we need? And the resources to fight them is probably going to be at least more than $7.8 billion. But then he's just ignoring the experts who he's talking to about it. And Sam is basically like, well, we're no match for them. They can wipe us out from orbit. So she's like, they'll show up in ships. Cause he like you said, we'll bury the Stargate. And she's like, Teal'c's like, and he's like, yeah, they'll just show up with their ships and wipe us out. And we won't ever even get a chance to fight back. So Jack's pissed and he won't stand down until Hammond basically forces him to. But Hammond does stand by SG-1's record. And then we start diving into the record.
Lots of clips.
And thus begins the clip show. Yeah. Open files. Roll clip.
Can you imagine if Hammond actually did that in the meeting, though? Just like the projector like comes down from the screen. Actually, sir, if you could just direct your attention this way.
We've been recording all of our adventures.
We've had body cams the whole time.
We're way ahead of our time. Here we go. Yeah. This is Samaria. Please welcome.
GoPros in 97. We actually get a date, though, for that tells us that February 10th of this year. And we get clips and February 23rd they talk about. So that's interesting. It's nice to get a little bit of a timeline. And we get clips from Children of the Gods. We get the... and this is where we get a reference to Share and Skara being siblings. Yep. So that's reinforced here. But we get Jack to, convincing Teal'c to join them. And so they're basically trying to say, hey, we almost died and we pissed off Apophis and now he's going to be coming after us. And Kinsey's like, well, you escaped. So clearly it's not a big threat. And it's like, the only reason they escaped is because they miraculously managed to convince Teal'c to not kill them.
Also, like, miraculous escape is, like, SG-1's motto. Like, I wouldn't really hold much, like, stock in it.
Kinsey also brings up the fact that we brought down a Death Glider with a rocket launcher. Oh, which is fair, but, I mean, it was one Death Glider. And
kind of by luck.
Yeah, like, again, it's SG-1's miraculous luck that...
And I'm pretty sure you can't shoot a rocket launcher, like, into orbit. Like, what are you going to do to, like, line up the U.S. military on the border and just, like, aim them up?
They won't go that far.
No, that's not how that works.
It'll come back down. It's not going to be good.
No, it's going to really backfire.
Is that how gravity works? Shoot it up, depends, it comes down?
We need Sam in here. Sam can explain to us the finer points of why this won't work.
What comes up must come down. Then we get the wonderful moment of them saying, well, they actually killed us once. Like, if us escaping proves that they're not that dangerous, well, we did die.
You know that Jack, like, before the meeting was like, okay, guys, we'll play the death card as, like, the ace, like, up our sleeve. If all else fails, we'll let them know that we have died before.
So then we get reintroduced to the Nox. And we get to watch Sam break cover for Jack again.
Ah, good moment.
And then they point out that they had an energy shield that their weapons couldn't penetrate around an individual, so it's only reasonable to assume that they will have similar energy shields around their ships.
Good assumption.
That seems logical, yeah.
Yep. And then we get a movie clip from the movie of the ship landing on the pyramids when we start talking about the ships. And then we get the singularity clip when Teal'c identifies Nirti's ship in orbit or coming after them. And then again, he's like, well, but you guys escaped from that ship on foot. It's like
a ship on an abandoned planet with open fields and no civilians or buildings.
And I was like, so apparently SG-1's plot armor is butting him in the ass now.
I bet you Brad Wright was like sick and tired of getting all this fan mail about like how like this would never happen. This doesn't make sense. And like, I can't believe let them escape. And they're like, fine, here we go.
Well, the thing is, this is also an absurd argument. And thankfully, they pointed out of like, you guys escaped. Well, SG-7 and all of the people that lived on that planet were not so lucky. No. Like, and this was Nirti, who's like, doesn't have that strong of a force and is kind of on her own versus like Apophis, who has large amounts of slaves and Jaffa. And SG-7 got dead.
Got dead.
It's the alternative slogan to Got Milk. Got dead.
So then we move on to Cold Lazarus with the crystal talking.
Good ep.
Yeah.
That was a great memory lane here.
It is a good episode.
No, it's, I mean, Cold Lazarus is a good episode. Politics is not a good episode.
Yes, exactly.
Just clarifying.
So then we get Kinsey questions Teal'c about if the gold are here, I'm just going to play it. I think I have the clip.
If they're so strong, why did you switch sides in the first place?
Because what is right cannot be measured by strength.
Get him, Teal'c.
Such a great line.
What a fucking pussy, Kinsey. What kind of argument is like, if you're an abuse victim, like, why did you leave your abuser then if they were so strong? It's like, what the fuck? What kind of answer? Like, what kind of question is that? It's like, oh, they're strong, so like, you got to stick with them. It's like, no, fuck you. Get him, Teal'c. Oh, we don't deserve Teal'c.
The Earth definitely doesn't deserve Teal'c.
I'm glad we have him, but man, we don't deserve him.
Yeah. So Kinsey doesn't care about other worlds, which honestly is somewhat fair. Like, his duty is to the American people. That's who he's elected to represent.
Sure. It's also a very, like, one of, like, a popular American ideals is, like, not isolationism, but kind of, like, us first. Like, let's take care of our business before we go save other people.
Yeah, I'm yep. So
I know, I was like skirting the line there. I was like,
where are we going with this?
But so then they say, like, be warned though, US will be the first to die since they're strong and they're the ones who poked the bear. So it's like you can not care about other worlds, but when the other worlds come calling, they're calling for the US first.
We're number one.
Not the best time to be number one.
That's very true.
Although, I don't know. I feel like I'd rather go first than watch the rest of the world burn and then die. Like,
yeah. I don't want to live through the apocalypse. I want to go in the first wave.
Yeah. I mean, but I live in a rural area, so come apocalypse, I won't be one of the first ones to go, probably.
We're fucked.
Well, bye, guys.
Yeah, you'll live in Greenwich City.
Like,
so.
Look at freaking Independence Day. Houston gets blown up with like a nuclear bomb, so I'm gone.
Mm-hmm. Yep,
that's why you should move. I'm just saying.
I'm all right. I just moved. I don't want to do that again anytime soon.
Moving sucks.
It's terrible.
God, it's the worst.
All right, so then we get Enemy Within, a reference about how the Stargate is dangerous. And this is a very valid point because Kowalski did almost destroy the SGC.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the Broca Divide, the caveman virus that could have potentially gotten out and infected the population.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So they mentioned the three close calls, the Enemy Within, Broca Divide, and Brief Candle, where all three times we came very close to something terrible.
But is Brief Candle really? Yeah, it doesn't count because the nanites don't only work on the planet.
Right, but they didn't know that at first.
Right. That's true. Okay, all right, that's fair, I guess. But, like, in the context that we're talking about, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. I will only give them Enemy Within and Broken Divide.
And a little bit Cold Lazarus, because a freaking alien made it out of the SGC. Yeah.
Okay, all right, okay.
That one's fair.
That one's fair, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so they talk about how, well, we did manage to stop it in all of those cases. Like, Earth didn't die. Mm-mm. And they managed to not only save the SGC, but, like, so in Broken Divide and Brief Candle, they also helped the locals and got allies out of it.
Yeah.
And we get a reference to the fact that they've been back in touch with the Argosians in the for Brief Candle and checked in on them. And so that's kind of nice to get a little bit, like, okay, we didn't just bail on them after making it so they have to live a normal lifespan.
Yeah, that is one thing that I guess you can't really do in the show because there's so much to cover. So I guess that's why it happens in the books. But I do wish that we had more reference to, like, the SGC or SG-1 kind of, like, going back and, like, maintaining those relationships and, like, revisiting places that we've already been. But I understand why we don't.
Yeah. So Jackson mentions he might retire there.
I bet.
So it's so inappropriate. Retire with the baby that he got sexually transmitted aging from.
It's not the best episode. Okay.
No, too bad. Yeah, so basically, Kinsey accuses them of not having any fear of the things out there, and Jack is, like, quite the opposite. Like, we respect it. Like, nobody knows better the dangers and the breadth of what they're dealing with than SG-1, and how it may be dangerous, but it's important. And I don't remember everything that was said in the scene, but I did write, God, he's hot in this scene.
He also said that anything as powerful as the Stargate deserves respect.
Yeah.
But also, he's hot. I didn't watch the episode when we recorded this. I didn't watch it in preparation for this recording either, but I do know he was hot. What was that quote where it's like, I didn't see Jack O'Neill today, but I know he looked good?
Yeah, so they point out that right now is when they need it the most because they do need to be gathering tech and weapons, even though they sort of suck at gathering tech and weapons.
Yeah. Well, pretty soon we're about to get really, really good at it, so it's fine. We just haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah. I feel like we do graduate, like...
We end up with FTL drives and ships, so...
Yeah. So suck it, Kinsey.
Suck it. How much did it cost to make those?
Yeah.
So Kinsey listens to all of this and declares that he is shutting it down.
Yeah. What an asshole.
Yeah.
What an asshole.
And in response to this, Daniel decides to just go ahead and drop the alternate reality bomb.
Jack in the corner is just like, oh no.
But I mean, why not? He's already decided he's going to shut it down. Yeah. So let's just throw it out there and see what happens, even though nothing's going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kinsey is really not swayed by this new piece of information.
I'm shocked.
And so basically Daniel is saying killing Ra set in motion a sequence of events that leads to an imminent attack. And that hasn't happened yet because it takes time to assemble an army. And we know that they already tried to send an army through. If they didn't have the Iris on the gate, the Earth would have already been invaded.
Right.
And so it's really just a matter of time before they can assemble an army and bring them in ships is basically what they're maintaining. Like, alternate reality or not, that's the logical outcome. And Teal'c can attest to that just based on him. He was the first Prime. Like, he's very knowledgeable about their tactics and how that'll go down. And mm-hmm. he said that a long time ago when they were first talking about the Iris and them going through. And he's like, then eventually they'll just come in ships.
Right.
And Kinsey says to let them come.
Oh, my God.
Which is because remember, Kinsey's not military. I feel like that is, like, such a gung-ho, I'm not going to throw around a particular political party, But it's such a particular ideology of like, fuck it. Like, America's number one. We can never lose. Like, woohoo, let's do it.
Like, well, it's, but the thing is, too, it's also like super easy to say, but how many soldiers are going to have to die to do that? Like,
but it's no skin off his back. Like, he's just there just to send people to go to tell them what to do. And
and he'll end up as like the political hero of like, I'm leading our people in this time of war.
Exactly.
Like, fuck off, Ginzy. You're the worst.
Yeah. So then he gives us this real obnoxious quote.
Colonel O'Neill, you underestimate this great nation.
It is you who underestimates the enemy. We have challenged Apophis. He will not rest until the people of this world worship him as their god.
There is only one god, sir. And I do not believe for one moment that he will allow what you're trying to tell me to come to pass. We are, after all, one nation under God.
And you think God is going to save us?
So I think one of my major like issues with that whole part is that he dares tell Jack that he doesn't have faith in the United States when his whole like career is built on like serving the United States. Mm-hmm. It makes zero sense whatsoever, and kids need to die in a fire.
Yeah, he is talking to a general and a colonel who have devoted their lives to the service of their great military, mm-hmm. and saying, you underestimate us. And it's like, dude, no, they know exactly. What?
I would love to get, like, Brad Wright in the room and be like, okay, we got to talk about this. What were you thinking? Who were you channeling? Like, were you... Because I feel like that, like, bringing... It's eerily on point and scarily on point, this, like, merging of, like... religion and politics and like mm-hmm. the military and like American idealism. I'm like, there's all of these layers, which to me feels like a pretty intense thing to take on for like an SG-1 clip show. And so I just want to know, Brad Wright, what was happening here? Like, why throw that in?
So yeah, so I agree, Jess. I think it's a pretty good amalgamation of politicians. Mm-hmm. And I think this is one of those things, too, where when you're watching it, based on your own political views, you could sort of see him as the opposite party either way.
Yeah.
Because he skews a little bit left because he's like cut military spending. And he skews a little bit right because he's all one nation under God. Mm-hmm. So I think... how, like, you can kind of watch it with whatever goggles you have on for your own political leanings, right. and still hate him. And so I think that's brilliantly executed. Yeah. Like, you can hate him regardless of what your political beliefs are.
And I think you brought this up when we recorded it the first time around, but you compared that to Captain America when mm-hmm. he has that line when Captain America is like, there's only like one God, ma'am, and I don't think he does it like that.
In reference to Thor and Loki, yes. being gods.
Yes. And I feel like that is like not a better execution of it, but like it's a different execution of like referencing like Christianity or like the belief in one God.
I just don't think that they need to be in, I don't know.
I don't think so either. Okay, so here, this is a totally way off topic, different conversation. But I kind of agree with you, Mal. I feel like anytime like the God thing gets brought into like media, I feel like everyone gets tense, regardless of belief, just because if you're a believer, you're like nervous, like, oh God, how's this gonna go? Like, oh, maybe you wouldn't say, oh God. You'd be like, how's this gonna go? And then if you're a not believer and you're like, what the fuck is this doing in my movie? And like, I think you can fuck up like the story you're trying to tell, because I think so many fingers are in the pie and you don't want to burn the fingers in your pie.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. No, I agree that I think the Captain America version of it is executed better, especially because it's mostly just Captain America being like, he's not afraid to take these guys on, which is also very Captain America's character. Like, mm-hmm. he was punching giant bullies in alleys when he was a skinny little asthmatic. Like,
and he wasn't saying that God is going to, like,
yeah,
right, of course.
He's like, I'm going to go take these guys right. on because they're not actually God.
Right. And Kenzie's like, no, God's going to save America.
Which is absurd.
Yes. Is it, though? Is it?
and closing that door and to the rest of the episode.
So yes, so the episode ends with Samuel saying he's sorry it had to end like this.
No, he's not.
Yeah, bullshit. Mm-hmm. Teal'c requests to go home, which I think is fair. A very reasonable request.
But he can't, right? If I remember right.
Hammond can't let them go.
That's right.
So Jack also wants to go. Jack wants to go with Teal'c to keep fighting, and Hammond said he can't. He basically, at that point, they're only allowed to bring back the teams that are off-world and not send anyone else out through the gate. So then Hammond dismisses them, and we get a real pretty shot of SG-1 looking at the gate, and it's like, it really kind of does feel like the end.
Mm-hmm.
But not, because, you know, it's not.
Maybe they were, like, hedging their bets, like, I don't know if we'll have another episode in the budget or not.
Yeah, so that's the episode.
Huzzah!
Yeah. Yeah. Let's rate it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to give it 2 out of 7 chevrons.
Ooh.
Because at least it's not blatantly offensive. Like some episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And I really do love the Jack and Sam reaction to finding out they were engaged in another reality. It's worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. Mel?
I'm also going to give it 2 out of 7 for the same reason as Chelsea did. But also, I like Ronnie Cox coming in as a villain that comes up every once in a while. I think he's great, as much as, you know, you love to hate him. But otherwise, clip shows are not my favorite, especially when you're binging stuff, so you have it like automatically there.
Just watch this. But,
that's actually a good point, though. We didn't consider this like in context of
Well, yeah, because there would have been no. I mean, I assume reruns don't show up on. What is this?
Not usually. Was
it Stars? Is it Stars? Is that what
Showtime.
It was? Showtime. So. I mean, there's no reruns. There's not. You can't really get it on VHS at that time, I don't think. So, like, if you missed it, you missed it. That was it.
Yeah. No, yeah. Clip shows were definitely more useful, back then to catch people up before you jumped into your giant season finale.
Yep.
But it's definitely obnoxious. But, I mean, it was obnoxious even back then when I watched shows live. I understand the cost thing and the utility of making sure your audience is all up to speed.
Yeah, I'm gonna give it a 2 as well, and I will let Brad Wright in his own words explain why. Some people don't feel the episode is very good. They feel a little bit ripped off. With clip shows, fans are seeing things they've already seen before, but the person who has never watched the show before, they don't mind that at all. But what I tried to do, and what I think Ronnie delivered very nicely, was a really good performance leading to a cliffhanger. And that's essentially the only reason I'm giving it a 2 out of 7. Thank you, Brad Wright, for reviewing this episode for me. And that's pretty much it.
Yep.
Air medal. No one. I guess Teal'c gets the air medal for me.
Yeah.
I'll agree with that.
He's got some snappy one-liners that are like, fuck you, Kinsey, which I appreciate.
Yeah, and he's also like, if you guys aren't going to fight, I'm going to go fight.
Yep.
So, agreed. Teal'c.
Yes. We will be talking about Within the Serpent's Grasp next week. If you love this episode and you just don't understand all the hate we have for Kinsey, God, and the clip show, let us know on Twitter at ChevronsLock7 or on email. Oh my God. ChevronsLock7@gmail.com. You can also find me, Jess, on Twitter at Jess. Nope. What's my name now?
Professor Tennant.
Prof Tennant.
Thank you, Prof Tennant. You can find me on Twitter at Prof Tennant or on Tumblr at Professor Tennant.
You can find me, Melanie, on Tumblr at My Stupid Dumb Flyboy or on Twitter at Melanie Martian, MARSHAN.
And you can find me, Chelsea, on Twitter at Cahils and on Tumblr at Pianosa 2 to the Fighting 8th.
Do you know how we could end this and what we haven't said in a very long time?
Close the iris.
Yeah, close the iris! Medal of Honor? Valor? What do we call it?
I don't remember what we call it.
I don't remember what we called it either. Medal of Honor didn't sound
it's
right.
It's not it. It's, what is it? What is it?
Air medal. It's air the medal. Air medal. We have a podcast.
Yeah, we do. We're professionals.
So professional.
So professional.